The Thomistic Institute's Rome Study Abroad program for undergraduates is unlike any other. Immerse yourself in a rich intellectual tradition and learn from top-tier Dominican professors and other Catholic intellectuals. Encounter the Eternal City and experience profound spiritual formation as you take excursions walking in the footsteps of Dominican saints through places like Siena, Florence, and more. The application deadline for the spring 2027 semester is August 1st. To learn more and apply, visit ThomisticInstitute.org/Rome.
Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
So thank you. It's a great privilege to be with you here this evening. Thank you for coming out on a Monday. So I must confess that I'm a big fan of the great indoors. So when I did my doctorate in Switzerland, I was not the first Dominican to go there, of course. Since the 19th century, there have been many. But I'm often asked, did you hike or get out? I'm like, nope, stayed in the priory. So to come here this evening meant I had to leave the Dominican priory on Michigan Avenue to come here. But so I broke my rule of not exiting any building. And now that I'm here in this building, I will remain in this building because I don't want to venture back out. See, the kind staff is already, we'll talk to Father and we'll work out some type of arrangement. But if there is something that could cause me to venture outside of the safe haven walls of a building, it would be St. Thomas Aquinas. Now, this book, the Summa Illuminated, A Guide to St. Thomas Aquinas' Masterpiece, began out of the initiative of Ave Maria Press, which is associated, as many of you know, with the University of Notre Dame. And I want to commend them to their editors and to the staff there. They were very efficacious and persistent and gracious and patient and made the whole process come together. And they came with a question, namely, they observed something that many booksellers would observe, and that is this. There's a lot of Summa copies being sold. Why is that?
Public domain.
Although one could argue that that would not be the case because you wouldn't have to buy them, then you could just get it online. So they were selling a lot, it's of course true, a lot of Summa copies, and they wanted to know why this was so, and so I gave them my thoughts, some of which I'll share this evening. And then they said, what is a good book that gives you an overview of the Summa in a single volume to help people understand it? And we talked, I recommended some titles, and then they proposed that I do this book, and hence that's how the book came to be. And so what I want to do this evening then is to provide an overview of why and how I think the Summa Theologiae, why it's still so perennially interesting, and how it's still so useful even though we're in the 21st century, which is 8 centuries later than when it was first written. And to do that, we note several things. First, one of the most important words in the entire philosophical and theological lexicon of scholastic authors, philosophers, and theologians is the word quia. And quia, of course, means because. And this is precisely the first word of the entire Summa Theologiae. Quia, because. And I don't think that that's accidental or even incidental for the composition, the purpose, and the perduring efficacy and utility of the Summa Theologiae. This isn't an accidental, occasional utility. It's something that's in. But rather, what Thomas Aquinas himself recognized with regard to the Summa Theologiae was something in the order of causality. And if there's one theme that permeates the literary structure, the shape, the formality of the Summa Theologiae, it's an attentiveness to causality. There is nothing haphazard about the Summa. The first word of the Summa is the word because, and causality permeates the form and the matter, the shape and the content of the Summa Theologiae. Now we pause here. That's where we're beginning kind of a train journey through the Summa not stopping at every town, every place, every train station, but looking at the highlights. But if we pause here, this is a significant point in relation to our contemporary moment, because the Summa Theologiae, and some of you have it or can download it, public domain, have it on your shelf, it's a large work, and it seemingly, ostensibly covers almost every major compartment, aspect, doctrine of the Christian faith, at least in summary resume fashion. No other work of sacred theology that's included in the classics list can claim this. Many great theologians, doctors, teachers, fathers came before St. Thomas. And yet, as one renowned Thomist has observed in writing and in conversation, that were you to put all of the writings of pick your favorite theologian, pick your favorite doctor on the table, and ask a super genius to read all of those and then write a summary of the Christian faith, you might not get exactly what the Christian faith actually contains in all of its truth and all of its comprehensiveness. This is not an insult to any other scholastic, not an insult to any other doctor, and certainly not denigrating the importance of the magisterium. Aquinas is not infallible the way the church's magisterium is. However, the Summa is and remains unique insofar as Aquinas, much like a landscaper, went through the entirety of the terrain of sacred doctrine, holy teaching, and with precision, with clarity, and with accuracy, summarized the whole of the Christian religion. There were other doctors, other theologians, other fathers, other scholastics who wrote penetrating and insightful accounts and engagements with Catholic theology, with the deposit of faith. We don't deny this. But when it comes to getting everything laid out clearly, Thomas is unique. And in some ways, we see Aquinas, with reverence, calling back some perhaps excessive or rhetorically yet unclear statements from earlier fathers, taking things further than some other theologians had up until his point. And in the end, if you think about Catholic theology at the beginning as something like a Denver or a Colorado wilderness, a lot of other theologians were like the bulldozers. This is necessary that you push and move. There's a lot of beep, beep, beep going on to open up the space. But of course, any of you that have built a house or have worked in construction projects know that you can't be too concerned about the details because you're doing the important work of getting the area cleared. But sometimes you went a little too far here, not enough there. And that's what the landscapers, that's what those that bring precision bring. And so Aquinas is like a master landscaper, a precisionist that does not downplay the significance of those who came before, but offers certain correctives and specifications that the church herself to this day still adverts to and recognizes as her own. Now, what then utility does the Summa have for us? Many people might think in the age of artificial intelligence and control or command F that the Summa provides us with a very useful, comprehensive source in which we can pick and find and identify those doctrines, those teachings which are important. It's almost like an encyclopedia or a collection of doctrines. This is true. It can be used that way, and it often has been used that way. And its mere sheer size and formidable length is, of course, one of the things that continues to account for its ongoing relevance. But the thesis of this book and the reason why underlying the Summa itself as a work, underlying its ongoing relevance and interest, is I think that that's not fully the reason why the Summa is still so interesting and relevant and efficacious for the present moment. To state it another way, the Summa brings something much more than a work that covers everything. It brings something else. And here we'll add another footnote. Of course, the Summa doesn't cover everything because God is infinite and no number of pages, no amount of, you know, spoken words, transcribed letters could ever exhaust our God who is in himself esse ipsum per se subsistens, pure act. So Aquinas' work, although it is comprehensive in scope, it is not exhaustive. And so what I propose, therefore, is that the best way to understand the Summa is to look at what we can call the formality that underlies and informs the Summa. And this is not a mystery. St. Thomas himself explains in the opening pages, the opening lines of the Summa Theologiae, why he's doing this, what this work is about. And he explains in light of causality, the origin of the Summa. And what is the causality that he identifies? He explains in the very first page, often skipped over to just get to question one, the first part of the Summa. He explains because, causality, quia, it belongs to the Doctor Catholici Veritatis, the doctor of Catholic truth, the teacher of Catholic truth, to instruct not only the proficient, the experts, but also the beginners, the incipientes, because it belongs as a proper fulfillment of the office of Catholic doctor, doctor of Catholic truth, to teach the experts, the grad students, we might say, and the beginners, the novices. He says, I am about to undertake this work. Now we pause here to contrast it with our contemporary moment. Many of us in this room are theologians or philosophers or have studied or teach. And we might think, yes, St. Thomas, people teach, you teach, we all teach. And this is true. It's good. We need catechists in the parish. We need Thomistic Institute speakers. We need bishops who have the office sacramentally and ecclesially of teaching. But Thomas, at that time, in the pedagogical structures of the 13th century, recognizes, and it's important for us to grasp this ourselves, to recognize this ourselves, that the office of teacher was not something that could be allocated to oneself. He was not a bishop, but to be given a chair and to be installed in a sacred liturgical ceremony as a teacher of Catholic truth meant that he was doing something that on which his salvation depended. To be a doctor, a teacher of Catholic truth at that time was something like a sacred office. And he says, therefore, for my very identity, I am called not just to instruct the super smart, the advanced, but all those who are just beginning. And therefore, to fulfill my work, I have to do a new work, the Summa Theologiae, which can extend to and consider the needs, the pedagogical needs of the beginners. That's how he begins the Summa Theologiae. He says that there is a need here in the present academic pedagogical circumstances of our day, in which is not being met. Now, if we put an ellipsis there, the dot, 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 that might give us a moment for pause. What do you mean, St. Thomas? Didn't we just say, recognize that you are a Catholic, a teacher of Catholic truth, that this is a sacred office? It's well established that the church proposes this, guards it, and entrusts it only to those whom she has determined are worthy of this. The answer is yes. And yet now it seems you're saying, St. Thomas, that there are not the pedagogical means at the disposal of a very significant demographic for the students. Namely, beginners are not being served well. Are you suggesting, St. Thomas, that the academic structures and curriculum of 13th century Europe is not well proportioned to, effective for, conducive toward academic learning? And the answer is yes. What did the medieval doctors do in their day job? They did three tasks, and this is just historically verifiable in the text, the records. Three tasks that the master, the doctor of sacred theology, did at the university to great acclaim, with great respect, and with great reverence by those who attended the courses. First thing that the master of sacred theology did is he lectured, commented, lectio, on sacred scripture. That's the heart of what the doctor of Catholic truth did. So if you were a student of Aquinas, you would show up in the classroom, you would not raise your hand. It's very different than today. The master would come in. Europe still has these kind of vestiges. And he would lecture. And what he would lecture upon in the classroom was upon the biblical text. This is from whence we get very significant biblical commentaries from St. Thomas, like his commentary in St. John, like his commentary in Romans. Those are edited, redacted, augmented, made more precise, and then published versions of his courses. And so if you entered in a certain year at the University of Paris when Aquinas was teaching there, he might be on John chapter 6. And you're like, oh, guess what? You're going to be hearing about John chapter 6. What about John chapters 1 through 5? Well, you got to wait for the commentary to come out. And that was normal. The Magister and Sacra Pagina were the doctores Sacrae Theologiae, the teachers of sacred Catholic truth were the ones, their primary job was to comment on sacred scripture. Second thing they had to do was they also had to oversee disputations. And these were public events for the university community, which were really entertaining. Remember, there was no Facebook, there was no Instagram, there was no radio, there was no YouTube. And so the townsfolk, those in the community, would come out and you would have the master come to the disputation, which would occur several times a semester or a year. And you'd have two grad students who would defend opposite positions about a specific question. Like, for example, can the angels read your mind? One grad student would argue, yes, it can. And it would give a bunch of biblical, philosophical, and theological arguments of why yes. And then the other one would give a bunch of philosophical, theological, and biblical arguments why no. And this could go on for several days, and this was highly entertaining. And then at the end, a day or two later, the master would go back through and engage each of the discrete specific points that the two grad students presented in the course of the disputation. And then he would provide his magisterial summation of the truth and engage either saying yes or no, and sometimes both, for the discrete specific arguments provided by the grad students. So the first task of a master in sacred theology, to lecture, to comment on the Bible. The second task was to oversee and serve as judge, authoritative decision maker, determiner, in disputations. And finally, the third obligation, duty, of the teacher of Catholic truth was to preach. And this is where Catholic University of America, our dear friends across the street from the Dominican House of Studies about 15 years ago, they published a very nice single volume of what we have, the notes, usually taken down from people that heard Aquinas preach, of his sermons on significant liturgical days. So that's what the master of sacred theology had to do. And what Aquinas implicitly and delicately says in the opening pages of the Summa Theologiae is that none of these three, really two, because preaching is not educational in the same way, it's more hortative, but the lecturing on the Bible and disputations, he says, are not meeting the students where they're at. He literally says this. He goes, most of theology today consists of commenting on texts. And it also consists in a lot of useless questions and different viewpoints. And if you read that general prologue, the opening page to the Summa Theologiae, and know about the historical pedagogical structures of 13th century Europe, you see he is saying that his day job, that the pedagogical academic formalities of 13th century Europe are disproportionate, not effective, unuseful for the needs of students. And therefore, he says, and it's very touching, the ending lines of the general prologue, he invokes divine help. He says, entrusting ourselves to the divine help, we will undertake a new work in which the material content of the Christian religion, which of course the Bible and disputations, that was all there, but with this new added, lacking, and necessary component, an ordo disciplinae, an order of learning, clarity of pedagogy, we will bring these two things together. That's the Summa Theologiae. And if we can envision it, you have Aquinas, the teacher of Catholic truth here, and the beginning student of Catholic truth over here. And he says, we're not coming together. There's still a barrier. And so how can we be reconciled? He says, I want to teach, present the clear, specific, authoritatively taught by the church, tenets of the faith that Catholic doctrine proposes, but with a pedagogically compelling, intelligible, receivable order of learning. And so it's within this coming together of the order of learning with the content of the Christian faith, the Christian religion is what he calls it, that the doctor and the student will also meet. And therefore, he says in this general prologue, there will be no useless repetition. The questions and topics will be considered at the right time. Something that should be treated earlier will not be treated later. Something that should be treated later will not come earlier. The order and structure of this work, its presentation, will be ordered to the facility of learning so that the students will not become fatigued or bored or confused, which he observed in the lectures that he gave, and especially in the disputations that he oversaw. Now, if we pause here and think about what this implies for Aquinas' life and work, this implies not only a gentle, but yet rather serious indictment against the educational structures of 13th century Europe, but also something rather remarkable about his own personal and spiritual intellectual physiognomy, his own drivenness. It's often said that when people get excited about the Summa, this was particularly true 50, 60, 70 years ago, you guys get way worked up about the Summa. But remember, Aquinas did a lot more than the Summa. And so there was this movement to read Aquinas' other writings, and almost to say that we almost over-exaggerated the Summa. And on one level, we would say, sure, he did do many other writings, and they also are useful insofar as they help us see Catholic truth. And they would also be said, remember, Aquinas never taught from the Summa Theologiae, which is true. Because what was his day job? He didn't show up to the dean, hey, what do you got there? Oh, I got a Summa. What are you going to do? I'm going to teach from this. No. You're going to lecture on the scriptures, and you're going to oversee disputes, and you're going to preach starting next month. We'll see you then, Father Thomas. It was often thought and said and claimed that there was an overemphasis upon the Summa Theologiae in contemporary 20th century, 19th century philosophy and theology, and we forgot about the other things that Aquinas did, and they, it was proposed, were more important because those were his day job. But here's the interesting thing. The fact that Aquinas wrote such a long and exhaustive, and at times exhausting work, that almost killed him, and one could argue it did kill him because, of course, he didn't finish it, he died. It showed not its unimportance, the unimportance of this work, but the labor of love and passion and devotion such that he would spend himself, in addition to the busy writing and teaching schedule of a master of sacred theology, to provide a supplement that he knew would not be accepted or implemented immediately in the universities. Aquinas' Summa, understood in this context, comes out not just as a okay work that we can put to the side, but it comes out as nothing less than a manifestation of Aquinas' own heart, his own mind, his love for God, and his love for his students, because he would not have written this except for the fact that he felt compelled to do, to fulfill what his vocation called him to do, to produce this work. And it's also a prophetic work, because Aquinas knew that the current structures of 13th century academic pedagogy would not use the Summa. And he says, that's okay. This work is so important, teaching sacred theology in a way that people can understand. I'm going to do it, write this work, even if I never see, which he never did, it utilized in the classroom, and even if it doesn't get utilized in the classroom for a long time, which it didn't. Even in the Dominican order, when Aquinas was already growing in popularity in the 14th century, it wasn't until about the 15th, 16th century when even we Dominicans started to use the Summa, we would still use his other writings. We would use his commentary in the sentences of Peter Lombard. We would look at his disputed questions. Even we, his brother Dominicans, Father Sebastian, can you imagine the brothers, we don't appreciate always someone's genius. Even the Dominicans did not fully appreciate the importance of this work. It was a prophetic work that he did with confidence and insight, knowing it was needed, but maybe it wouldn't be until later that people recognized how much it was needed. This, therefore, dear friends, is why the entree point to the question, or to the solution to the question, why the Summa Theologiae in the 21st century? It is not just a historical work. It is that. Does it bear the shape, the language, the methods, questions and objections and responses and distinctions of a past time? Yes. But the prophetic purpose, namely, there are always beginners who need to learn and will be saved by, sanctified through, contemplating divine truth, that will never dissipate or disappear in this life, on this world, in this world. And the truth of the Catholic faith will never become compromised, will never become irrelevant, will never become something more merely incidental or accidental to human flourishing and indeed salvation, but will always bear relevance to human souls, to human lives, and to human salvations. Aquinas, from the beginning, therefore, wrote a work for the ages. And the church, she recognized very quickly in these pages of the Summa Theologiae that this was an accurate and intelligible treatment of her teaching. That's where we are today. So I don't, in this book, the Summa Illuminated, try to cajole or persuade or call you in with something like snake oil salesman. Come on into the Summa. It can change your life. Oprah, where are you? We should, you know, you think weight loss and happiness, self-esteem is found here and here. Let's try the Summa. No. It's because the Summa itself was written for us because we are still beginners and the teachings of the Catholic Church are still true. And we still need this coming together of us and our knowledge and our love with the truth that God has revealed and entrusted to the Church, the deposit of faith, the depositum fidei, for us men and for our salvation. So that's the underlying argumentation of this book. It's much more than a mere summary. At least that's my intention. I try to do it gently. I try to do it without being ponderous. I try to do it without constantly calling attention back to these meta-arguments that I'm making. But I don't think I have to be too cumbersome in this because it's so seamlessly written into the very structure of the Summa that anyone who begins to work through this book will also, by working through this book, be exposed and be conformed to Aquinas' pedagogical motivations and inspirations. Nonetheless, how do we enter into the Summa Theologiae? Many of us, I can still remember, the first time I opened up the Summa Theologiae, I was 12 years old. And yes, I didn't have a life. I know that. That's right. I lived in the countryside of Western PA with very loving parents, four younger sisters. And my allergies, like then, they've been killing me recently, were bad, surrounded by woods. This is before the internet really took off. And so I didn't want to go outside. Again, I've always been a fan of the great indoors. My sisters were out running around, throwing rocks, yelling. You know, they were not the tea-sipping sisters. These were very delightfully energetic sisters. They're all mothers and wives, now doing quite well. But I was a little out of place. And so I remember reading in the encyclopedia, a world encyclopedia that my parents had, about faith and reason, or about Christian religion. And they said, well, one of the most famous champions of the harmony of faith and reason is St. Thomas Aquinas. And I said, well, that sounds like my guy. Great. I saw this picture of this rather orotund-looking figure, one of the early pictures of Aquinas, and I said, good. So I talked to, you know, a friend of mine who had a theological library, And he says, oh yeah, I have a copy of the Summa. So he loaned it to me. This was the Mortimer Adler Great Books, kind of a bridge, two volume brown. They're molding in many library shelves right now. And I took it home and he loaned it to me. And I was so excited because I said, okay, I'm going to learn about the harmony of faith and reason, divine truth, matters philosophical. And so I began to do what any of us would do. I turned to page one. And immediately, I'm encountering words like causality, form and matter, privation, accidents. I can still remember accident. Like dropping a vase or a car accident? What are we talking about? Substance? Okay, I kind of have an idea of that. And very soon, I was lost. And I returned that to my friend. And I began to read books about Aquinas, and slowly over time then, I began to understand what was going on. So the purpose of the book is to help provide something of a guided tour of the Summa, translating and explicating, expositing some of the seemingly and initially elusive language and distinctions Aquinas is using. And it's here that it's helpful to remember. Aquinas is writing for beginners in theology. But in the 13th century, beginners in theology already had the equivalent of advanced graduate degrees in philosophy. What is philosophy? Philosophy is the study of reality insofar as it's knowable by human reason alone. And that's not in tension with divine faith, because the same God who gave us the mysteries of faith also created natural reality. And so by the time they showed up, the beginners in theology, they were not absolute beginners. They were beginners in matters of sacred doctrine, not in matters of philosophy. So he's presupposing a lot of philosophy. And that's one of the things the book tries to do, is to give key definitions and explanations of how Aquinas is presupposing philosophical investigations, even within the sacred doctrinal investigations, sacred theology of the Summa. Now, today, this is still relevant. It might be, and there might be some here present or probably watching too, who might say, well, you know what? That's just a Thomist, Dominican rationalism, because God is the God of mystery and he's elusive. And any mind that says, I can grasp and put God within a category box, that's an insult to the divinity. That's a legitimate point. Of course, no human concept or idea can restrict, isolate, or quarantine the divine being. God is infinite. My ideas are finite. Why is it that even today, like it or not, whether we choose it or not, is the question of philosophy and of being so relevant and inescapable to sacred theology? It's this. You and I are incapable of understanding, receiving, embracing, and even accepting divine mysteries that God reveals to us if we don't know what things being truth is, even naturally. To state it even more directly, we know one of the mysteries of faith is, this is my body. Hoc est anum corpus meum, one of the most sacred mysteries in all of the Christian religion. No one, through natural ingenuity, philosophical reflection, scientific instruments, would ever be able to conclude to, oh yeah, this is Christ's body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist. And yet, even though we need God to reveal this to us, unless we know something of what is means, being is, substance is, even naturally speaking, we will have no way of appreciating or receiving or appropriating when God reveals to us what divine being is, what divine substance is, what divine reality comprises. If I don't know what natural reality is, I will be incapable of understanding what supernatural reality is. And that's why in Aquinas' works, we see the natural and the supernatural coming together, even though the Summa Theologiae from beginning to end is a work not of philosophy. From beginning to end, it is a work of sacred theology. Why? Because it begins with what God says. And in fact, it begins with God himself. philosophy terminates in God. We start with natural reality, birds, trees, motion, change, form, matter. And at the end of the physics, at the end of the metaphysics, there's a first cause. God can come at the end of philosophy, but for theology, it's the beginning, because God reveals himself to us. And that's the beginning of the Summa. It starts with God. It is a work of theology, of faith, seeking understanding from beginning to end. Now, in the closing moments, before we open up for some questions, if you have some, in the book, I use a metaphor of sorts to describe the Summa, because it is intimidating, even if you are philosophically adroit. You can have a lot of distinctions in language and principles at your disposal, naturally speaking, and still, before the Summa, be overwhelmed by its intricacy. And so I like to liken the Summa Theologiae to something like a literary cathedral. Many of us have been to Europe or have seen pictures of the European cathedrals. I remember about 10 years ago, I had the benefit of walking through Notre Dame Cathedral before, you know, the original one before it burned down, unfortunately. And when you walk up to Notre Dame Cathedral, you are overwhelmed, even on the facade, by the sight of this. No one is ever going to confuse Notre Dame Cathedral with a Starbucks or a McDonald's or a hotel. The very shape of it points upward. The facade of the cathedral has all of these statues, intricacies, and designs that point one beyond oneself. And then you enter, and you see the high altar and all of the side chapels, all of the alcoves. You realize this is not just a building that has utilitarian purpose. This is a pedagogical space that is pointing to something beyond itself. And as, I didn't do this, but I'm sure some of you have or could, if you were to take a walking tour that actually tried to take in all of the intricacy of Notre Dame Cathedral or any of the old medieval, the great cathedrals and basilicas of Europe, it would take you more than a couple hours, maybe even an afternoon, if not several days. That's like the Summa Theologiae. If you are to take the walking tour of the Summa, you will come in the front and spend a little time there. There's no wasted space. The first question of the Summa about the nature of sacra doctrina, sacred doctrine, divine revelation, I like to say, is the heart of the Summa, and everything else is just a footnote to it. But you don't have to do that. You can go straight away to the main aisle, which is about God. Does God exist? What does it mean to be God? What can he do? What can he not do? Is there anything he cannot do? What is God considered in himself? What is God like considered in relation to us, or rather us in relation to him? God is one, but God is also triune. You can do that. And you can proceed, but there's no reason why you have to take the walking tour of the Summa and follow the precise footsteps, the progression, the table of contents exactly, because you could do what I did, and that's that you made a right and you just sat in one of the side chapels and took in the beauty and the illuminosity and the splendor and the transcendence of that room. You could look at the stained glass windows and not look at the architectural design, just look at what was captured in the stained glass windows and benefit greatly. And so much like taking a walk through a glorious, refulgent, illuminative, transcendent, meaning cathedral, architectural structure, you can also go through the Summa, as many do, and that's fine, identifying key things that interest you and benefiting from them. However, if one wishes to read the Summa the way Aquinas intended and to receive the full benefit of Aquinas' writings, every little step, part, question, article has a purpose and a meaning. Every objection, the wrong answers that we usually skip, they have a meaning and a purpose. The said contra, his short response, has a meaning and a purpose. The longer response, the respondeo, has a meaning and a purpose. And then all of the replies to the objections have a meaning and a purpose. And not only that, but like the joints of the Summa or the prologues, these little introductory sections to each question and at times, sometimes even the articles that explain why we're talking about what we're talking about here, how it connects to what came before, and how it's going to connect to what comes later. Every little part of the Summa Theologiae is expressive of Aquinas's promise to his readers in fulfillment of his sacred obligation as a teacher of Catholic truth, not to have any wasted space, any unnecessary repetition, any fat in this work. The Summa Theologiae, thus, is truly a marvelous, wondrous masterpiece of God's grace. Coming back to that as we conclude. Remember, he says at the beginning of the general prologue, at the end I alluded to, he says, I'm going to rely upon God's help. Anytime you see in Aquinas's writings the word help, that's code for grace. That's why later on, whenever there were controversies amongst Catholic theologians about grace, it wasn't called the Congregation on Divine Grace. It was called what? The Congregation on Divine Helps. Help is code for grace. And Aquinas says, I can't do this work myself. I need to rely upon the divine assistance. O God, come to my assistance. O Lord, make haste to help me to bring this wondrous work that attempts to accurately, even if comprehensively, present the truth of God. So therefore, practically, how can one begin to read the Summa? The best way, of course, is to begin however you wish. It's a little overwhelming, just like walking through Notre Dame Cathedral can be overwhelming, but start. Don't have any anxieties, be intimidated. Pick any subject, any question, any topic, and begin to read. As you begin to read and as you progress, if you wish to jump around, fine. You can go to this side chapel or that. But as you begin to read, you might notice that the order and the connection of the different treatises, the different subjects, and the different sections of the Summa are all integrally related. And if one does discover this towards the end or as they get deeper into reading of the Summa, you begin to see that Aquinas's aspiration was, I believe, in God's goodness fulfilled, namely, that he would present this work in such a way that it would suit the needs of beginners, you and I, of future generations, and therefore, in many ways, this is slightly exaggerative, but it's not fully, the order in the table of contents of the Summa Theologiae is almost as important as what Aquinas says in its respective parts and on its respective pages. You are entering into one of the most intricate, remarkable manifestations of God's wisdom and goodness in an unworthy servant like St. Thomas Aquinas, who gave us through his, Aquinas's instrumentality, a guide, a wise outline, blueprint of the whole of sacred theology in its major contours. Again, not exhaustive, not perfect, but it is a presentation of the Christian religion brought about because of God's wisdom and grace and help and love that to this day still rewards even poor, simple people like you and me who wish to reach up to St. Thomas's mind, not because of Aquinas himself, but because all those who stand with Aquinas in anything, and supremely in the Summa Theologiae, never stare at St. Thomas, but rather stare with St. Thomas at the one true God. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.